Okay, we are recording. We are ready to go.
Shalom aleichem, Rabbi Yisrael. We start with the pasuk on Hashiva li yisrael yishrecha v'lach nediva tismechini. We hope Hashem to show us, to treat us to the thrill of his salvation. This is something we're building all the time. When things are normal, the thrill of seeing Hashem draw us close is a different time than normal. It's certainly at a time like this where we desperately need the Yeshua. We met here last week, and since then, Chal Yisrael has been for a very, very this because really tough. This was really tragic. And the tragedies have also struck home. Mrs. Resnick, who lost a very chosh of a father this week, Tzvi Kolten, a yid who I had the schus of getting to know, many opportunities to shmooze with him in Divrei Torah, and I use the word shmooze deliberately, because Divrei Torah is sometimes something that you approach as an isek. Now you are going to do the mitzvah of engaging in Torah. For him, it was what intrigued him, and that was the capacity that I knew him in. Often, on the way out of shul, we would cross paths, and he would just have something on his mind that he wasn't working out properly in the parasha. This was a yid of old stock, and it's a great loss. Also in our family, we lost a revered great uncle this week, Reb Shimon Ziesel, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, in Borough Park. The Makkah is hitting what we consider the top of our pyramid, the Ziknei Ha'am. The Ziknei Ha'am. We have to appreciate this and respond accordingly. When we sit down at the Lila Seder, commemorating that very, very great night in Mitzrayim, let's remind ourselves that most of the people from that night died in the Midbar. They did not actually make it into Eretz Yisrael. They were the Dara Midbar. The people who experienced those very, very great experiences. The people who laid down the foundation of what for us the Leila Seder is. The people who laid down for us the relationship with Hashem. The people who founded Har Sinai, founded the Torah in our nation, who founded Am Hashem, these were the Karbanis of the Midbar. Now, when we use the word Dara Midbar, it often has a negative connotation to us. It sounds like negative this week. Dara Midbar were a bunch of troublemakers. But I think a little would show how from the Gemara you see that that is not the conclusion of the Gemara. The Gemara cites an opinion discussed in the Mishnah that the Dara Midbar has no chelek v'olam haba. And the Gemara then said to Rabbi Yochanan, who said that Chas v'Shalom, they were Hasidim, they were Hasidei Elyon, and he cites about them the pasuk that says, "Isfuli Hasidai, Korsei Brisi Alei Zerah." The Hashem says about the Dora Midbar, who all perish, "Gather unto me my dedicated ones, my Hasidim, Korsei Brisi Alei Zerah, who established my covenant over a karma." Am I still not heard well? I'm going to try to talk louder. We'll see what we can do. Now, exactly what the understanding was there in the Dora HaMidbar, we're not going to get into right now. But we will say this. So this is the power of Avigdor Miller. This is the perspective that he gave on it there. And we're going to apply it to our situation here also. Hashem was using the great people of the Dora HaMidbar, the people that actually experienced the most fundamental and foundational experiences of Klal Yisrael that constituted the basis for all the continuation, Hashem used them as karbonis for building the future of Klal Yisrael. And they, so to speak, were offered up to Hashem on the Mizbeach of building the continuation of the quality of Klal Yisrael. How that applies to the Dor HaMidbar is not our subject right now. But Hashem is putting us through a grind now. And if previously we were still saying that it's a threat, if previously we were still saying that it's putting us through difficulties and it's putting us up against challenges that we have to meet, now it's already at a point where there are karbanis. There are karbanis being offered up on the Mizbeach in this process. Exactly what Hashem's cheshbon is in each case is beyond us, as we understand. But nevertheless, we do have rules of how to relate to these things. And we're going to go back to the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Tanias that really has to be quoted every day now. You'd say it probably 3 times a day. And we've quoted it already. We're not going to go through the whole thing now. Now, when there's a tzara of this nature on the tzibor, it's meant to be taken as a wake-up call. But we're going to move straight a little further into the Rambam's words, where he says that if a person does not respond properly to these types of tzaras, it's achzarius, it's cruelty. The Rambam says that it's because it'll cause it to get worse. But there's another element here. There's another element here. Hashem is putting us through a purification process. Hashem is trying to raise Klal Yisrael's level. And He's using karbanis. He's using very valuable karbanis. He's taking some of the, what Klal Yisrael is always deemed the top of our crop, the Ziknei HaEdah. And if we move on and don't become what Hashem is trying to make us into, it's achzarius in that sense. The Chas V'Shalom, these things should have not left a mark, that these things should have left us in the same place that we were. The Chas V'Shalom, these materials of so many, Chanu Islam on a wholesale level, are basically left without an effect. Didn't achieve their purpose. That's achzarius. It's cruelty to leave it in such a situation. Before the way my Rebbe, Michael Jacobson, said it in about this situation, he said that one of the greatest tragedies that could be in this sort of situation is that it'll end. And things will go back to normal. We don't know where this is headed. We don't know where this is headed. But assuming that things go back to normal and we'll just have been back in the same place will really have been a tragedy of historic proportions. And at this point, the stakes are very high. Because at this point, there are actually karbanos being offered on that altar. This process, and therefore, it behooves us all the more to make sure that we are getting what we need to get out of this process. And therefore, we mentioned this week in some emails, the challenge here is that it's to come back here and basically say the same thing. It's basically to keep repeating what we've been saying and to keep reiterating it. But that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to add perspective, we'll expand on it, but basically that's what we need to be doing here because the message is not changing. On the contrary, you know what? That is a major part of what the message is. They bring from the Arizal that Mitzrayim was what we call the klipa of shikha. It's the impure element of the midah of forgetfulness. What does that mean? So the example, the Shem Yishmael gives the example. Look at the simple example. The simple example is that I just want to stress, I want to put into parentheses. Forgetfulness is a midah, as we'll explain. It's a human faculty that happens by itself, but to an extent it's a midah, as we'll discuss now. In some ways, like all other midahs, in some ways this is a midah kadesha, to be able to have the ability of forgetting. And in other ways, it's a midah that's shaykh to the realm of Torah. And this is what Mitzrayim represents. It's where forgetfulness is shaykh to the realm of Torah. And you just look in a very, very straightforward way. A makkah comes. Hare and Mitzrayim are responding and saying, okay, we see clearly, Hashem will accept it, get rid of this Makkah, we're going to let the Jewish people go. The Makkah goes away. Instantly, they forgot the effect, and they're back to nothing doing. They're back to normal, comfortable life. The effect is gone. This is the shikha, the realm of tuma, of the midah of shikha, being able to forget. You experience something, but that something goes against the natural setting. And as soon as you settle back into the natural setting, you can easily forget about it. The question is, do you allow yourself to do it or not? And they did. And the Shem Yishmael goes on to expound in a very, very hush of a piece how this really was the Midah Mitzrayim. The Midah Mitzrayim came from a place of being drowned in a material perspective, being drowned in a material reality, and not being able to connect to the spiritual undercurrent, to the ruach is the meaning behind what's going on at the natural level. We have to understand that the spiritual and the material, ruachnius and gashmius, are intertwined. And Hashem weaves ruachnius into gashmius, and Hashem weaves his messages into what seem to be the natural events of the world. We've been going through now, everybody would say this is not the natural world. It's abiding by the laws of nature. Everything can be explained within the laws of nature. And the meaning of Mitzrayim is to settle into a perspective of, okay, this is Chayna, this is nature, this is the world what it is. And the Shem Yishmael says that this was reflected in the major difference between Mitzrayim and Canaan. The major difference between Mitzrayim and Canaan, Mitzrayim was able to live a comfortable life of a completely material perspective, operating in a material reality without ever really needing to acknowledge a spiritual, a ruchnistic, a higher divine element to their life. This manifested in a very simple, basic, natural, and physical difference between Eretz Yisrael and Mitzrayim, which is expressed in the pasuk. Mitzrayim had denial.
Okay. Are we heard again?
Yes.
Okay. Denial was always there. You never had to worry. Eretz Yisrael is a very different story. We know that such a part of the regular life in Eretz Yisrael was, is there going to be rain? Is there going to be rain? And the pasuk puts it into perspective. The difference is that in Mitzrayim, Hashem basically said, you know what? I'm going to give you your life in one contained material package. It's all there. Move out of my seat, out of my sight. Stay in your material realm. And geg isn't the hate. You don't need to be in touch with me. In Eretz Yisrael, wasn't like that. In Eretz Yisrael, you needed Hashem to be constantly providing sustenance. Otherwise, there was no material existence. And this maintained the connection between Hashem and his people. In two ways. First of all, the famous concept that it required Klal Yisrael to always reach out to Hashem. It required Klal Yisrael to call to Hashem on a regular basis. It required them to keep in touch. And this was the purpose of it. This was the purpose of it. Hashem was saying, you, I want you to keep in touch with me. But also, not just in the level of tefillah, also in the other direction. The Maharal says that this is the reason why a person needs to eat regularly. Why couldn't Hashem just set it up that Hashem gives you sustenance, Hashem provides, sets your body up in a way that it runs for the 150 years that you're alive. Why do you need to constantly be replenishing it? And the Maharal says, it's in order for you to constantly be dependent on Hashem to experience the fact that Hashem needs to constantly be fueling life into you. You live with that reality. And this is something you should be experiencing every time you eat. And this is also part of the reason why we're supposed to relate to bread with kavod. It's supposed to be mechabed bread. Why? Because this is Hashem's connection to you. This is Hashem, this is the expression of your constant ongoing dependence on Hashem. And this was the major difference between Eretz Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a reality of, the material reality is self-contained. Hashem can simply step aside, so to speak. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, The material reality constantly operated on an open channel between Shamayim va'aretz, which had to go in both directions. Hashem constantly providing, and that manifested in rain, and the Jewish people constantly turning to Hashem and davening for it. So this once again comes back to the shayrish of what we said, that Mitzrayim was the klipa, was the tumah of forgetfulness. Whatever happened, they were able to sink right back into that material reality. Because to hold on to a spiritual perspective, of a material reality, to be relating to the material world, to be relating to the events around us, to be relating to health, to be relating to food from a spiritual perspective, even though we have to work with material rules, it requires effort, it requires sensitivity, it's delicate, and we can very easily lose it and just let the gravitational pull us back into being sunken in the material perspective. And this is what Mitzrayim represented. This is what Mitzrayim was. It was forgetting, not being able to maintain that awareness, that realization. Even when they were shown it in the greatest way, even when Hashem was operating openly in Mitzrayim, they were able, this was their midah, to just forget it as soon as it wasn't banging them over the head, and to sink right back into that material reality, to be sunken in the choymer, in the material. This was Mitzrayim. Now, we come back to our reality today. When we were hit with it, it was shocking. And it was a very great wake-up call. And we responded. And now a couple of weeks have gone by. And we can be settling into a certain routine. Settling into a certain routine can take one of two mamish opposite means of just settling into the material reality as a material reality. It can manifest in two completely opposite ways. It can manifest into settling into a comfortable routine. People have been saying, and this is actually a sign of growth, that being stuck at home by yourself, with the family, while it was initially very challenging, is proving to be a nicer experience than might have been expected. And this is actually a sign of growth. This is a sign of our personal development, and it's something to be applauded, but it also contains a danger. We can grow complacent. We can grow complacent and say, you know what, okay, this is something I can live with. And you lose sight. If we would have been talking about this reality a month and a half ago, we would think of it as completely unthinkable, shocking. But you know what? It can turn into natural reality easily enough. That's human nature. It will move in that direction. It's a coping mechanism. It'll move in that direction. Also, at the other end, what I said now applies to the people who it begins and ends with inconvenience. And that is something that can be smoothed out, and that's something that we can actually grow by growing accustomed to it. But Rahman al-Islam, there are people who don't have that luxury. People are really suffering. People who are ill, people whose loved ones are ill, and Rahman al-Islam, where there's tragedy going on. And that different, almost opposite way of sinking into the material reality as a material reality, and that is just the dejection, just losing hope, the despair, getting down. And this also we found in Mitzrayim. This was a challenge in Mitzrayim too, and this was something that Pare operated with. The Messiah Yisharim points this out. When Moshe came and told the people that the Geula is at hand, initially they were excited, they were inspired. But then when some more time went by and it didn't happen, even though they were already showed certain signs, more time went by and it didn't happen, the Pasuk already says, V'lei shamu al Moshe mikaitzer lach u'me'avoyakav, and they weren't into it. They were sunken in the depressing reality. They were sunken in the dejected reality, and they were having a hard time. This is mamish what Paroi said. Paroi set it up as soon as Moshe came and started threatening his hold on the people. He said, on the contrary, let's pile it on, let's make it even harder for them. That'll push them back down. They won't be busy thinking about redemptions, thinking about revelations, it'll push them back down into the material reality of the daily drudgery and will have them securely settle there. This is mamish. Does everybody hear me? Oh, okay. I don't think you missed anything. We stopped as soon as it stopped. So we're going to continue. So we come back to what we were saying. Zed took a big hit. Olam Hazeh, we were all shaken by what happened. We were all shaken. But, as we're discussing now, it can go in two opposite directions which have the same common denominator. Going from that push into the spiritual realm, into the spiritual perspective, into seeing how, look what Hashem is doing. Hashem is causing Olam Hazeh to disintegrate, to saying, you know what? We can even deal with the material reality of a disintegrated Olam Hazeh. It's something we can live with also. Or, Chas V'Shalom, sinking into the sadness of it, to the despair of it, the common denominator being that we are losing the spiritual connection, losing the tuning out, and letting the gravitational pull of the Tumah of Mitzrayim, of the Shikha, do its thing. So now, what is it about? If so, we see that what we need to work with against the Tumah of Mitzrayim, and this really in a very large sense, we discussed last week what the Avoda is, and we're going to reiterate that. But now we're adding a whole new dimension where Hashem is demanding of us the next level. It's the ability of operating against the Midas HaShikha, against the gravitational pull, and we don't have fresh inspiration, but to inspire ourselves, to keep ourselves mechuzak, and to say that no, this should remain just as shocking to me. This should remain just as shocking to me as it was a month and a half ago. And I have to be maintaining that shock and maintaining that sense of being shaken. We sent out a piece from the Michtav Melio, which we alluded to last week, which describes a reality that we're going through as the process leading up to Bias HaMashiach. We are definitely not going to go the route of saying, okay, this is it. Nobody can make such a declaration. I don't know if nobody can. I'm not aware of what it would take for a person to be qualified for that. The fact that I'm not aware doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But we do need to be in touch with, like we said last week, Hashem is leading the world. The entire process of history is leading the world to a place of revelation. That's not flighty. That's not flighty. That's not up in the air. That's not shaykh to just the people who are that type. This is a reality we all claim to believe in. That means it's going to happen at some point. And right before it happens is going to be the time right before it happens. And that's also going to be real at some point. We profess to believe in that. So as we discussed last week, when we see things like this going on, this is what the Michtav Melio describes as the process leading up to it, where Hashem shows how the material world is disintegrating. And basically, the avoida that's incumbent on us, it's not just to stand by and watch it happen and say, okay, great, apparently great things are going to come, let's see where this leads to, but it places a demand on us to develop the perspective that this is imposing, which is what? That Olam Hazeh is not the real world. And that Malchus Cho Malchus Ko Olamim, Ein Oid Milvadoi, that Hashem is the Balabais, that as much as we thought that we control the world, this is Hashem's world. And this, as Michtav Melio concludes there, we need to move into this perspective. We need to move into this awareness, into this realization in order for the next stage to come. This is the reality we'll be living with. And when there's a Beis HaMikdash, when there are Nevi'im, when there is the Shekhinah residing among us in an open, revealed way, this is the reality we'll be living with. And this is the mentality that we need to be creating in order to go there. Now, does that mean it's happening next week? We don't know. We hope so. We would love to see it go there. Is it possible that it's a process? Hashem might demand of us not just to respond to the initial inspiration and say, okay, I got that I got that perspective. I got that realization. Now, okay, Hashem, go ahead. Let's bring on the next stage. Perhaps it will be quick. We hope that it will. We daven that it will. Perhaps it will be a process. Perhaps a part of the demand will be to develop this perspective and then to hold on to it, as we're discussing now. That's really what gives this avodah its way. As long as we're operating off the impetus of fresh inspiration, of the shock where it hits us in the face, okay, that to an extent is what we call Isarusa de la'ela. That was Hashem's work. The question is, can we maintain it through our own kaiches? And this might be a long haul. This might be a long haul. But the avoda now is to be internalizing, to be focusing, accepting. We discussed last week accepting it. Now, we're at a point where we understand we have to accept it. It's not changing so fast. But focusing on it, internalizing it, being an active part in the process in terms of allowing it to sink in, allowing it to affect us, allowing us to change our way of thinking. And therefore, I would suggest that we put extra emphasis these days when we say the words, Malchuscha, Malchus kol olamim, as much as it looked like man ruled the world, this is your world. That's what you're trying to teach. This is what you're showing now. And you're waiting for that select group who will really, really get and internalize the message. Malchuscha, Malchus kol olamim. When you say the words, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vanoira, think about those words. The great, mighty, and awesome God. We've never seen it before in our lifetimes the way we're seeing it now. To let that sink in, to let us be impressed by that, and move on with the next words also. Okel hagodol hagibor vanero kel elyoin. Goimel chasodim tovim. How while all this is going on, look at the chesed that Hashem is showing us in each of our private lives. Now, Hashem knows how long He has it planned for. We discussed yesterday in the Seder Shir, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev La'asos es HaKeitz. Hashem has in His view the end of this process. And He's anticipating it. And He's eagerly waiting to bring it to the end of that process. But what He has in mind, how long He has that planned, we don't know. We have to be ready to work with it and to maintain it. If last week we were emphasizing accepting it and realizing it, this week we're going to the next step and we're stressing, we're putting the emphasis on maintaining. And this might be harder than that first stage of the recognition. And on the contrary, the more we turn this into our perspective, the more we turn this into our mentality, the closer we're bringing the world to that place. When we talk about bringing the world closer to a place of Malchus Shamayim, what do we mean by that? When we're talking about bringing the world closer to a place of revelation, what do we mean by that? What we mean is that people are already living there in their minds. On Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about this before Tkiyah Shofar. And this is Vayta Michtav Meliyahu of Dessler. Mamish along the same lines, he says that when the Gemara says that why do we blow the Shofar twice on Rosh Hashanah? It's to confound the Satan. And Tosfos brings from Chazal, they say, why is the blowing of the Shofar confound the Satan? Because he thinks Mashiach is coming. And everybody asks, come on, the Satan is a lot smarter than that. What does it mean that he thinks Mashiach is coming? He heard the Shofar blown last year. He heard it blown the previous year. The Satan, we all have experience, very personal experience with the Yetzer Hara. We know that he's quite a smart character. He's a lot slicker than we are. And as we keep experiencing day after day, what does that mean? That he gets panicked. This is the Shofar of Mashiach. Rav Dessler says what it means is the purpose of the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah is to refocus on the fact that it's, again, it's Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim, right? We've spoken about this plenty. It's placing Hashem as the Melech HaOlam, placing Hashem Melech at the center of our focus. So, if we do that successfully on Rosh Hashanah, then on the contrary, the Satan is right. The world is coming closer to that state. The revelation is actually happening because it's a build-up in our minds. When it's built up sufficiently, then it'll manifest outwardly. But the process is that build-up of clarity, that the revelation is taking place in our minds. We are seeing Hashem moving in as Hashem Melech, as Einoid Milvadoi. And that all the rest of Olam Hazeh is batel to Him, and that we are willing to do that. We're willing to be mevatel ourselves to Him. We are willing to, as we discussed last week, to turn down the intensity on our material life. Not because we're dropping it, because we're being forced to do so, but we're going along with it willingly, appreciating the process. We're not working now. We shouldn't be running away from responsibility. I got flagged for that, Michtav Melio. Want to just move people into a place of, okay, that's it, Mashiach is coming, you're dropping everything. That's certainly not the message. That's certainly not the message. On the contrary, we're being challenged to say, you know what, you still are in the material world. Can you still be operating in the material world, but moving your perspective into a place where you see it all through a different lens? And here it's being shown to us tangibly. I see it through a perspective of Hashem Melech. And you know what? That now is going to guide, that is going to guide all of my material activity. I was asked, people were asking various things, particularly after I sent out that of Melio. And people were asking about, okay, so should we be completely changing our lifestyle? Somebody asked, I feel wrong now engaging in small talk. I feel wrong now talking about different material things that I'm involved in. Making plans, talking about simchas, etc. I want to just keep focused and not be involved in all of these things. But you know what? On the contrary, as we said before, Hashem is challenging us to attain that perspective, but in our material reality. And therefore, if we're talking about it in a practical way, we have to be ready to work this perspective into what we might have to sustain as a long haul. Hashem might have in mind to test us to see how long we can do this. And therefore, no, we're still going to be involved in material activities. The question is, can we approach them from a spiritual angle? We're talking a very, very basic way. When you eat, can you eat with an appreciation of the spiritual meaning of eating? Can you appreciate that you are fueling your body for the purpose of serving Hashem? Can you sense in the food what we discussed before, that this is Hashem fueling life into you? Can you sense Hashem's love of you and the good taste in the food? When you taste the food, eating and enjoying the food can be an intense avodah of avas Hashem. If you're experiencing Hashem's love and the good taste. When you're working, is your focus only the project that you're doing? Is the focus only the money that you want to make? Or can you imbue it with the ruchnis dikev meaning that really is inherent in that work, with an appreciation of you are partnering with Hashem and caring for a family, always appreciating whatever ruchniistic value there is in your work. Each job has its own angle. If you're a businessman, so you are not engaging in a parnasa that has challenges in the realm of Dine Mamanis. But you are engaging in a program where you're meant to excel, you're meant to shine, you're meant to be an example of what the integrity of a yid in business looks like. On the contrary, that is the spiritual meaning of your work. If you're a doctor, it's even more straightforward. You're engaged in chesed. You're a mechanech. You're providing goods for people. Think about the benefits that you're bringing for people and put thought into that. There are so many different layers of spiritual meaning in the material aspects of our life. We can't be letting go of those aspects now, but we're being challenged with approaching it from a perspective of, I do not live in a material box. I do not live in a system of materialism. I live in a world where I approach all the materialism through the lens of Ein Oid Milvadei, through the lens of, this is not a material world, but I still have to be doing these activities. And therefore, on the contrary, don't run away from the material activities, but approach them differently. And you know what? I'll add another thing. This is another question that was sent to me. Somebody wrote, you know what? We mentioned this earlier. Baruch Hashem, in our family, we haven't heard of tzaras close to us. So you have to thank Hashem for that. And these days have been very nice. It's been time of the family bonding. And again, the initial few days were challenging. But it's been very nice. And I'm starting to worry, like, these are intense days. Kind of like feeling guilty. Is this right that we're experiencing it this way? Especially when it's an Ace Tzara. And that's a very, very true question. But at the same time, what we want to say is, you need to be settling in. I need to be ready to be working with these perspectives in a long-term reality. And therefore, on the contrary, if you're settling into a doable reality, it's important to maintain it that way. It's important to put emphasis on preserving Menuchas HaNefesh, on preserving doability, while at the same time maintaining the right perspectives, not just settling into a comfortable reality. And therefore, yes, keep conscious of the broader picture. Don't resist the fact that you're settling into something handleable. On the contrary, invest your efforts into that something handleable. If you're bonding with your family, we're going to get to that soon, but if you're bonding with your family, that is a major part of achievement, right? If a couple of weeks ago, the thought of being stuck at home with everybody together in an unending way was just not handleable, so this is growth. And continue investing efforts there. And keep the spirits up. But, A, don't let yourself settle into a place where that just becomes a material reality. And B, you do have to remain aware of that this is an Ace Tzara. You have to remain aware of that, and you have to keep that present in your life in a way that will not conflict with something that can be sustained in a long-term way. And therefore, make a point of having Tehillim time. Make a point of discussing it, davening for the different names. Keep conscious of what's going on around you. Keep conscious of people around you who need a refuah. And if you can take little steps of depriving yourself different pleasures because of the fact that Klal Yisrael is suffering now, do that. Little things. You have to realize that the big focus now has to be, yes, on maintaining Menuchas HaNefesh and on making this doable. While at the same thing, different little small things here and there that keep you conscious of the fact that Klal Yisrael is going to an Ace Tzara now for a purpose. But sustainable. And at the same time, I want to also go in the other direction and say that there are all kinds of ideas and significances being suggested as to why this is happening, what's being demanded of us. And there's a lot of different interpretations of why this is coming based on all kinds of different interpretations of sources. Some are more profound, some are less profound. Some make more sense, some make a lot less sense. And what we would say is, we have regular klalim of things that will definitely bring us, that A, are the immediate first line response to tzaras in a general way, and B, that they will provide us with very great benefit and growth no matter where this goes, such that whatever the case is, you're not going wrong and you're doing everything right by focusing and investing your efforts here. And what's here? Here comes back to what we've been discussing the whole time. The basics. The basics. You're at home with the family now. You're at home with the family now and the basics are being challenged. Tefillah is being challenged. Yes, I'm repeating myself, and as I said before, I'm doing it deliberately. I'll continue doing it. And if you find that boring, I'm giving you fair warning that probably the next time we meet, this will be the theme as well. But it's going to take avoda now to be maintaining good tefillah. You can draw on a number of just halachas in Paiskim, in Shulchan Aruch, on how to do that. Have a set time for you. If you're davening biyachidus, if you have porch minyanim, so you have your times for davening. If you're davening biyachidus, have set times for it. Try to have a set place for it. Try to take extra measures to give it a tzurah, to give it structure. If you can gather the children together for a regular time of davening, make a point of doing digdukin that you might not usually do. Put on a jacket. Wear a jacket and a hat. If you do wear a jacket and a hat, don't stop wearing a jacket and a hat now. Do different things to enhance the fact that I'm davening now, and this is something that I don't want. Davening can very easily get drawn into just the grind of a non-ending day at home. That davening just kind of gets smeared somewhere along the way, usually at the last minute. Have a set time for it. Remember the words of the Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch that says a Pesukei Dezimra should be said b'ni'ima. Don't start routinely cutting it down to Baruch Shomer Ashrei Nishtabach. Have that as an agreement in the family that this is something, even when everything else is falling apart, that has to happen. And the rest of the day, do give top priority to what's going on at home. But this is something that has to happen. It should be said ben ima. We mentioned Mishnah Berurah who says that Pesukei Dezimra should be said k'mishamayin emois. Each word said individually, like a person is counting bills. You want to make sure you don't want to slur your words because you'll get a bunch of bills together with a bunch of words and you kind of lost track of where you were up to. And they have to start again. Each word is its own. Another very important halacha for these times is halacha that it says in Shulchan Aruch that to set yourself up without distraction. If we've been talking about this when it comes to cell phones and shuls, how much more so is it relevant at home? Try to set a place in the house, conditions where now you're not going to be distracted while you're davening. Learning. Okay, I'm not going to elaborate on what doesn't require elaboration. And the big, big focus of the Bein Adam LaChaveri at home, of the interaction with the family, the interpersonal interactions. We've discussed this, we've been reiterating it, I'm not going to elaborate on it now, but this is where the basics lie, and being mischazik in these things and pushing against the gravitational pull to keep these things up is the greatest form of avodah. And if we're not going to be held responsible for having missed one of 20 suggestions of what might be the truth significance now of what's going on now, and not having realized that that was the one in 20 that you should have been putting all your efforts in. And if there's something that does appeal to you, go for it, but not at the expense of this. This is something that is our first line response. It's focused on the being mischazik in the areas, in the core areas of our lives, and add to that, Kabbalas, taking on something in a fundamental area of life. These areas. Also, I'll add to the list, the standards of halacha should not be dropping down and getting smeared. Where we need to implement kulas and we need to implement kulas now, we'll be doing that. But one of the explanations of Al Chet Shechatan Lefanecha Ba'inus Ubaratzen, we confess for the sins that we did Ba'inus. Why do we confess for sins? Why do we say Vidu for the sins that we did Ba'inus? One of the explanations is that sometimes a person is in a situation of Ba'inus and he really does have to do certain Averis or disregard certain mitzvahs or utilize different kulas. But that sense of anus can lead to a situation where just everything goes. Right now, I'm in a situation of anus. No, part of the challenge now is to be able to say, here I need to be makel, but here I don't need to lower my standards. So that's being expected of us, and to take on small things. And here the small things might simply be maintaining, because it's a lot harder to maintain right now. But to be realizing that we need to be mischazik in the core areas of our life. And this is what we're going to refer to as the tshuva that the Rambam is talking about. Putting extra efforts into things that might have earlier come to us more easily. Now, this is a Shabbos HaGadol drasha. So, the first connection was what we talked about, that this is very, very much about working against the Tumah of Mitzrayim, the Klipah of Mitzrayim, of sinking into the material. But I want to go further with this. This, it's not, we shouldn't view this as coincidental, that when we're talking about Hashem bringing the world to a purer place, what do we mean by Hashem bringing the world to a purer place? By toning down so much of the material activity and by moving us into a place where it's much easier to connect to Ein Oid Milvadoi, let's not let it be lost on us that this came in the context of being closed in with the family, being stuck at home, in that very, very great unit of Kedusha called the Beis Yisrael, the Jewish home. This Leil HaSeder, we will be Mekayim Behidur, the pasuk that says, V'atem lo yitetzu ish mipesach beis yad boiker. Back in Mitzrayim, it was a situation like we're in now. Nobody's allowed to leave the home. It's not safe to leave the home. It's dangerous to leave the home. This is what's being imposed upon us now in Hashemayim. And one of the halachas of the Korban Pesach is, you're not allowed to bring the Korban Pesach out of the home. A person is not allowed to move from one place to the next when he's eating the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is primarily defined by families in their home. Rav Avigdor Miller and Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch put a lot of emphasis on this, that Hashem, it's on this night that Hashem was establishing Klal Yisrael as the Am Hashem. And this is where He conclusively stamped them as His people. And this is the significance. We put all that stress on how Hashem passed over the homes of the Jews. By passing over each home, Hashem was making a statement. This is Shaykh to me. These are my people. And what is the setting that Hashem set that up as? He did not have, Hashem showed His ability in Mitzrayim. He could have had it set up that they were all gathered together, all of Klal Yisrael gathered together in a big Beis HaMikdash setting. He could have also had it set up that the individual was on his own, Mizbaydidus. But Hashem set it up as the home, the family unit. The Beis Yisrael of Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says that here Hashem was establishing that the basis of the Am Hashem is based on that very great unit that we call the Jewish home. This is the basis for the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, and it's on this premise, on this basis, that all the great Kedusha and elevation and achievements of Klal Yisrael as a Klal joining together outside of the home, it operates, it draws off this. Rabbi Avigdor Miller points to the Gemara in Pesachim that says that on that night, each Jewish home was turned into a Beis HaMikdash. The Korban was offered in the Jewish home. What is the essence of the Hakravas HaKorban? Is the sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach. It's the application of the blood to the Mizbeach. Then, where was the blood applied? The blood was applied to the lintels and the doorposts. The Gemara in Pesachim, Tzadivav, says that there were three mizbeches that night. The two side posts and the overhead post. Those are the three mizbeches of that night, showing that yes, the Jewish home is a mikdash of Hashem. It's a mikdash of Hashem. And this is unquestionably a part of the message. Now again, if you want to view this also as an exotic message, okay, I'll concede. Perhaps, but I'm coming with the merit of the fact that this is the reality that's being imposed on us. We're in this reality whether we like it or not. So you know what? The way I want to be approaching this whole thing is, let's apply givens that are already there, not chidushim that we are extracting from the current reality, but taking givens that are there and simply seeing how they apply to this reality, such that once again, like we said before, wherever this heads, we won't have lost. These are our places that are relevant. So, appreciating this, appreciating that each home is a unit in itself, it's a world in itself. Rabbi Avigdor Miller extracted a very, very profound point from a known Gemara in Brachas, but a Gemara that its significance might be lost on us without his genius insight. And I'll work backwards. I'll say the bottom line and then work back to the Gemara where you see that from. But I want to approach it with an anecdote from Reb Zalman Auerbach, a very classic, well-known anecdote, but which brings out a much more powerful punch than it's often expressed. Reb Zalman was once walking into his home, escorted by a number of Talmidim, and before he stepped into the home, he made sure to, like, he made himself presentable. He tucked himself in, whatever it is, made sure that he looked good before entering the home. And he explained to those around him that it says that in a place where there's shalom b'neihem, shechina shruya b'neihem, where there's shalom bayis, where the family home is operating optimally, it's a place of ashras hashchina. And he said, I'm about to step into a makam of ashras hashchina. I have to make myself look good. So this is often expressed as like a shalom bayis point. Make sure you look like a mensch before you step into the house. Don't come into the house like a shlump. But that's really missing. It's not what he said. And it would be missing the significance of what he said. Take what he said very literally. He truly experienced and sensed that he was stepping into a zone of Shekhinah. Why? Because he was stepping into a bayis where there was Shalom, and there's Shekhinah there. This is the status. This is what the Jewish home is. And just like it says in Halacha, that before you step into a Beis Knesses, you know that you're stepping into the zone of the Shekhinah. The Lashon of the Mishnah Berurah citing the Arizal is Yizdazeh Ma'at. The person should shake for a moment, tremble for a moment before entering the shul. You should appreciate that this is what you're entering when you're entering a home. A home. A Torah home. A home that's running with Torah ideals, that's fueled by Torah ideals, that reflects Torah ideals, that's a place of Ashras HaShechinah. It's a good place to come to daven. It's a good place to come to insert notes into a crack in the wall before they fix it. And to appreciate that, to appreciate that this is what our home is. A home is not a place where, it's not a station where you just let your hair down before moving on to, you know, the important things that you're busy with in life. The home is the Beis HaMikdash where you're operating. And Rabbi Avigdor Miller made a very, very profound point. He said, just as we understand that every Jew, every neshama is something eternal. It's something that has, you see the body, but the neshama is something very, very unique, a once-in-history occurrence that has its place in the backdrop, in the scheme of world history. It's something that will be there forever. It has its place on the wall of fame. Every person from the past continues to be an existing entity that's contributing his share to the story of Klal Yisrael, which is essentially the story of the world. His own unique share in the very, very specific and particular life that he had. And we know these famous concepts. We know that David HaMelech is an eternal entity. Moshe Rabbeinu is an eternal entity. Every great person is an eternal entity. And you know what? Every Yisrael who lives his life as an Oved Hashem has his own, is providing the history of Klal Yisrael, is providing Hashem's plan for history with his unique aspect of it. And this is something that continues to remain forever. It's something eternal. Avigdor Miller said that the same goes for the home. The home is not just a place where a number of neshamas operate and do what they need to do. The home is a unit that is stone, just like the body is flesh. But it also has a pnimius of ruchnius that is something that will remain forever. It goes down in the history of Klal Yisrael, and it has its place in Tchiyas HaMeisim. The home, what you made out of your home, the Kedusha, the unit of Kedusha, the pocket of Shekhinah in this world that you made out of your home, your own home, if in 500 years from now that home is rubble and things were built over it, that home continues to exist as a spiritual entity. And this is what Chazal, this is how Avigdor Miller explained what Chazal meant at the end of Brachas when they said that just as Hashem is going to restore the tzaddikim themselves, He's going to, at Tchiyas HaMeisim, He's going to restore the homes of the tzaddikim. What you make out of your home is something that becomes an asset, part of the property of Klal Yisrael for all of eternity. And therefore, understand that our avodah in the home now, being in the home, is focus. We're being removed from, first of all, from the outside world. But even besides that, even as a klal Yisrael, sometimes we tend to become batel in the klal. The klal is very important. But the yachid and the family is something sacred that cannot get lost in the klal. We dip into the klal for the benefits that the klal bring us, but we do not become batel in the klal. Hashem cherishes klal Yisrael as each individual yachid in terms of what he is. And therefore, counting klal Yisrael is considered something so dangerous. And this is Rabbi Chiya Yaakovson. My Rebbe pointed out that Magefa is associated with count. Pointed out now in the context of what's going on now. Magefa is associated with counting klal Yisrael. Why? Because when you turn klal Yisrael into a faceless number, when you turn that into a mass, you are eliminating the significance of klal Yisrael. What is klal Yisrael? Klal Yisrael is the cherished yachid. The cherished yachid. Hashem has another yachid and another yachid. And this is expressed when Hashem does say to count klal Yisrael, he says to count them b'mispar shemois. B'mispar shemois. A count of names. Name reflects a person's individuality, his uniqueness. And Hashem is emphasizing, I don't cherish klal Yisrael because, whoa, I have 600,000. I cherish klal Yisrael because I have one yachid and I have another yachid, and that should not get lost in the count. That's why count is such a dangerous thing. Because the value of klal Yisrael is in what each yachid is and what each yachid contributes to this to the klal. Each individual is something that is kiviyachol. We mentioned this in the shiur the other day. Is kiviyachol a dream come true to Hashem? Something that Hashem never had before in history, that Hashem was looking forward to. How does it come together if there are millions of us? Hashem has a very, very broad capacity. But for him, each one is an oilam bifnei atzmai. It's too much for the mind to grasp. And therefore, Chazal tell us, chayiv adam loyma b'shvili nivra oilam. Each person has to appreciate and believe. It's hard to believe when you see a million Jews around you. But that the entire universe would have been justified, Hashem, in creating a universe and in going through the whole process of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you were the purpose of it. All of your ancestors existed because they were needed in order for you to appear on the scene. Hi, but isn't the same true for them? Again, leave that to Hashem. Hashem intertwined all of his different tachlises together. But for each individual, it's true. And for each family, it's true. Don't get lost in the klal. Don't get lost in the bigger events. The bigger events, the things that are going on the national level, are not where it's really happening. It's just the backdrop. Where it's really happening is in the individual struggles that we're going through in our own personal lives, in our homes, what we're accomplishing in our homes, where the real accomplishments of our century, where the big headlines are happening, is in the headway that we make in the various relationships in our lives, in the breaking through difficulties that I have with this person, with that person, in working together within the family unit to soften each other's edges, to grow through my interactions with the people around me. And how do you bring out the uniqueness of each family? Don't worry about finding the uniqueness. Go back to what we discussed before. If you as a family are putting the focus on the basics, each person with his own personality, and each person interacting with the individual personalities of the people around them, that will come together to create that very, very unique recipe of that bayis b'Yisrael, that zone of Shechina, a very unique manifestation of Ashras Shechina that's completely unlike any other home that Hashem so cherishes. And this is what we mean when we say that by contributing to the establishment of another Jewish home, you are storing one piece of the Ashras Shechina of the Beis HaMikdash. This is what we've been doing. This is what we're doing these days. We are investing in our home. We're building in our home at a rate and at a level of intensity that we never had the luxury to do. But it's making us now, and the difficult straits that we're in. It's our difficult straits that are providing us with the love of putting a lot more emphasis and focus
and
efforts and intensity into our homes, into our bias, into our relationships, into our family than we ever had, than we would have the luxury of doing in normal circumstances. So this Vaiter comes together in terms of appreciating the purification process that Hashem is putting us through. And applying it and applying ourselves to it focusedly. Now, I want to end with another word. There are going to be people who are going to be say their by themselves. This is another part of the reality. There are so many different facets to what Hashem is doing here. And this is another very challenging part of this reality. The natural way we think of the Seder is not a solitary state. And this year Hashem is saying that for many people, this is what I want. Hashem wants a whole layer of Klal Yisrael providing him with this very unique Avodah, which I don't know if it happened, handful of instances throughout the generations, all of a sudden now it's happening on mass scales. But the Avodah of being able to apply yourself to a Seder by yourself. You might not be used to making a Seder alone. Perhaps you've never made a Seder on your own before. And Hashem is saying, you know what? This is something that I want today's Klal Yisrael to provide me with. And realize, appreciate, that you have an opportunity that is not made available in the normal setting of people doing a Seder together with family. In an expanded situation, the Seder night is an extremely potent night. It's an extremely potent night when you see what it says in the Sfarim about the power of Tefillah of the Leil HaSeder and about how everything just opens up to the highest of places and how in the spiritual realm it's as though night simply didn't fall. The lights shining through in the Leil HaSeder, I always say, Korev Yom Asher Hu Lo Yom, Terek Yom Cheshkas Laila, in the Piyutim at the end in Nirtza. It's a night that shines like the day. This is the night. This is the properties of that night's inspirations. This is the night that Yitzchak chose to impart the brachas upon, well, he thought it was Esau, but Maisa Yaakov, which would give him the power to operate as the Am Hashem for all the generations. He chose to draw on the properties of the Seder night. The power of tefillah of this night is immense. But you know what? The reality of the Leil HaSeder doesn't leave much room for it. We try to give it a little focus. At the end, if we still have any ounce of koyach in us, if we appreciate it, we try to invest a little bit in some tefillah. But you know what? Now Hashem is saying, I am choosing a whole contingent of Klal Yisrael that I want to have by themselves for this Leil HaSeder. In order to have that focus, in order to utilize the very, very special moments of the Seder, who knows if this is another aspect of that push toward the final moment. All the different ways that we've been talking about giving that push toward the final moment. Who knows if this is another very powerful aspect. I'm choosing select individuals to be completely on their own in the Leil HaSeder, to put in this extra intensity, to put in this extra, to utilize the power undisturbed, unencumbered by the usual beautiful family setting in order to give it that push to the finish line. Bezas Hashem, we should be zoicha to get through these days, utilizing them intensely, while at the same time, putting that same intense effort into maintaining the Menuchas HaNefesh, into enabling ourselves to approach it with a sense of gravity, but with a sense of mission, and therefore with a sense of simcha as well, with the tzaras, appreciating the tzaras, being mishtatif in the tzar, but understanding that there's a mission there, that there's a challenge here. This is something that can bring us to very, very great heights, and Bezras Hashem ultimately to that greatest height, and we should be zoich enoch this Pesach to meet in the Beis HaMikdash, and if you want to be well equipped for that, join Reb Aryeh in the Shir of Halacha Lamaisa, how to prepare for the Korban Pesach right.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Jacobson. It's a big lot to follow. Everyone is welcome to stick around or to go back to what you were doing before. The Korban Pesach Shir will start in just about 1 minute.